This is tape number 2, side number 2, of the book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
Israel divided into two nations. Did you notice that it is now the 10-tribed kingdom, headed by the Ephraim-Manasseh tribes with an Ephraimite as their king, the inheritor of the birthright promises, which is called the House of Israel? The tribe of Judah left to Rehoboam, along with the Benjamites, and later, after Jeroboam kicked him out of office in Israel, the priestly tribe of Levi, is called in Scripture, not Israel, but the House of Judah. They are all actually children of Israel, but are no longer called by that national title. This is emphasized so much because the common conception is exactly the opposite. The average conception today seems to be that the tribe of Judah, which remained, carried the title Israel. Most people seem to think of the 10 tribes as merely certain tribes driven out from the nation Israel. But it is Israel which now sets up its kingdom under the Ephraimite Jeroboam in the land of Samaria north of Jerusalem. It is not Israel, but Judah, a mere 3 tribes broken off from Israel, which is left behind in Jerusalem. The 10 tribes were not broken off from Israel. Israel did not remain in Jerusalem. Instead, Judah was broken off from Israel. Israel at war with the Jews. Notice it carefully. The house of Judah, now including the tribe of Benjamin under King Rehoboam of David's dynasty, was about to fight against the nation Israel, with its 10 tribes headed by Ephraim and Manasseh. Now let us have scriptural proof that the 10-tribed people called Israel, often prophetically spoken of as Ephraim, are not Jews and never were Jews. Remember that the term Jew is merely a nickname for Judah. Hence, it applies to the one nation, or house of Judah only, never to the house of Israel. From any exhaustive concordance, you can learn that the first time in all the Bible that the word Jew occurs is in 2 Kings 16:6. Nowhere in all the Bible before this does the name Jew appear. Notice it. Ahaz began to reign as king of Judah, verse 1. He sat on David's throne, verse 2. At this time, a man named Pekah was king of Israel. King Pekah of Israel formed an alliance with Rezin, king of Syria, against Judah, and together the armies of Israel and Syria, allied, came up against Jerusalem. They besieged King Ahaz of Judah, but could not overcome him, verse 5. At that time, says verse 6, Rezin, king of Syria, the ally of Israel, fighting with Israel against Judah, recovered Elath to Syria and drove the Jews from Elath, verse 6. The first place in the Bible where the word Jew is used, we find Israel at war against the Jews. Who drove the Jews out of Elath? The ally of King Pekah of Israel. The army fighting with Israel against Judah. And the children of Judah who resided in the town of Elath are called Jews in a manner which distinguished them from the house of Israel, with whom these Jews were at war. Observe the significance of that. The first place in Scripture where the name Jew appears, the Jews were at war against Israel. They are of a different nation altogether. They are, individually, children of Israel, but they do not have that national title, House of Israel. It is wrong to call the Jews of today Israel. They are not the nation Israel, they are Judah. And wherever Israel is today, remember that Israel as a national name does not mean Jew. Whoever the lost 10 tribes of Israel are today, they are not the Jews. Wherever you see the name Israel, or House of Israel, or Samaria, or Ephraim used in prophecy, remember this, it never refers to the Jews, but to Israel, which was at war against the Jews. House of Israel, not Jews. No place in all the Bible does the term Israel refer to the Jews exclusively. When the sense is not national, but individual, the term Israel alone, or children of Israel, or men of Israel, may, and sometimes does, refer to or include the Jews. Such an expression, for instance, as ye men of Israel, which frequently occurs in the New Testament, refers to Israelites as individuals in a collective sense, not a national sense. It usually refers to Jews as individual descendants of the patriarch Israel, or Jacob. Moses may not scripturally be called a Jew. He was a Levite. Abraham was not a Jew. Neither was Isaac nor Jacob, nor Adam or Noah for that matter. The descendants of the patriarch Judah are racially Jews, and also all who joined themselves nationally to the tribe of Judah, those of the tribes of Benjamin and Levi. Jews are Israelites, just as Californians are Americans. But most Israelites are not Jews, just as most Americans are not Californians. The Jews are the house of Judah only, a part of the Israelites. But when these people are spoken of as nations, rather than as collective individuals, the term Israel never refers to the Jews. House of Israel never means Jews. The three tribes at Jerusalem under the Davidic king are called merely the house of Judah. But of Ephraim and Manasseh, sons of Joseph, the dying Israel had said, "Let my name be named on them," Genesis 48:16, and truly they now bear the name of Israel. From here on, the tribe of Judah, with Benjamin and the tribe of Levi, is called Judah, not Israel. The 10 tribes, headed by Ephraim and Manasseh, from this time on are called Israel. They are not Jews and never were called Jews. From this time on, the children of Israel, 12 tribes in all, are divided into two nations. And now, for the first time, the birthright goes into one nation, Israel, headed by Ephraim and Manasseh, while the scepter remains in another nation called the house of Judah. The two phases of the promises to Abraham now are divided between two entirely separate nations. For many generations, Israel and Judah remained as separate nations in adjoining territories, having their own separate kings. Why should ministers and professed Bible students be in ignorance of this, when four whole books of the Bible, 1 and 2 Kings and 1 and 2 Chronicles, are devoted to explaining it and recording the history of these separate rival kingdoms? Look at the maps in the back of your Bible. There you will see the territory of each nation plainly shown. Judah retained the city of Jerusalem, its capital, and the territory known as Judea. Israel occupied the territory north of Judea. Samaria became its capital city, and the house of Israel often is called Samaria in prophecy. This, too, is a vital key to understanding prophecy. Samaria never refers to the Jews in prophecy, but always the 10 tribes, the house of Israel. We want to impress here that Israel and Judah are not two names for the same nation. They were, and still are, and shall be till the second coming of Christ, two separate nations. The house of Judah always means Jew. This distinction is vital if we are to understand prophecy. Because most so-called Bible students are in ignorance of this basic distinction, they are unable to rightly understand prophecy. The next place where the term Jew is mentioned in the Bible, the house of Israel had been driven out into captivity, lost from view, and the term applies only to those of the house of Judah. Israel rejects God's rule. Immediately on becoming king over the house of Israel, Jeroboam, tribe of Ephraim, set up two golden calves, introducing idol worship in the kingdom, 1 Kings 12:28-33. Jeroboam was afraid lest his subjects, in going once a year to Jerusalem to keep the Feast of Tabernacles, should return to Rehoboam and he should lose his new throne. The introduction of idolatry was to prevent this and to keep the people home. This idolatry, with Sabbath breaking, Ezekiel 20:10-24, was the great national sin which became such a curse to Israel. Generation after generation, God pleaded with the house of Israel to turn from tradition, from their fathers' ways, and to return to keeping God's commandments. But through 9 different dynasties under 19 kings, Israel continued these national sins. Sins so great in God's sight that finally God caused them to become a conquered, captive nation. Now let us note a passage which has been consistently misinterpreted. In 1 Kings 14:15-16, we find, "The Eternal shall smite Israel, not Judah, as a reed is shaken in the water, and he shall root up Israel out of this good land which he gave to their fathers, and shall scatter them, not Judah, beyond the river, because they have made their groves, provoking the Eternal to anger. And he shall give Israel, not Judah, up because of the sins of Jeroboam, who did sin and who made Israel to sin." This is dealing specifically with the result of Jeroboam's idol worship in Israel, in the northern 10-tribed kingdom which possessed the birthright promises. It is these people who were to be rooted up and scattered beyond the river, not the Jews. Yet this passage is quoted by nearly all students of prophecy as pertaining to the scattered condition of the Jews today, the very people to whom it does not apply. This is one example of the fact that what we are here covering is a veritable key to an understanding of many long-hidden prophecies. Unless this is kept firmly in mind, prophecy can never be correctly understood. The people which this passage says shall be rooted up and scattered beyond the river never were called Jews. They were the people headed by Ephraim and Manasseh, possessors of the unconditional promises of becoming a great nation and a company of nations, becoming so numerous they would number into the hundreds of millions, possessing the gates of enemy nations, becoming a colonizing people, spreading out till their colonies spread around the globe. Yet many who come to see this distinction between Israel and Judah, between Jews and the other tribes, after having seen it as a great new light, will, by force of years of habit, fall right back into the old rut and apply texts referring to Israel to the Jews. The terms House of Israel or All Israel, when the meaning is national, or the terms Jacob or Rachel or Ephraim or House of Joseph or Samaria, often used in the Bible in prophecy, relate to the 10-tribed birthright people, not to the Jews. This is a key and a master key to Bible understanding. Israel driven out and lost. In the year 721 through 718 BC, the house of Israel was conquered and its people were driven out of their own land, out of their homes and cities, and carried captives to Assyria on the southern shores of the Caspian Sea. And then, lost from view. Therefore the Eternal was very angry with Israel and removed them out of his sight. There was none left but the tribe of Judah only. 2 Kings 17:18. The Eternal removed who? Israel. It is Israel which was removed and driven from the eternal sight until they became lost from view. Who was left? Judah only. Only the Jews. Israel was now gone. They became known as the lost 10 tribes and are so designated today. Gentiles replaced the house of Israel. Now notice 2 Kings 17, verses 22 and 23. For the children of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, which he did. They departed not from them until the Lord removed Israel out of his sight, as he had said by all his servants the prophets. So was Israel, not Judah, not the Jews, carried away out of their own land to Assyria unto this day, written about 620 BC. Observe that the people who had the national title Israel and the birthright promises, who were not the Jews, were carried away out of their own land, Samaria. They left that land, never yet to return. Now note the following verse of this same passage. And the king of Assyria brought men from Babylon, and from Cutha, and from Ava, and from Hamath, and from Sepharvaim, and placed them in the cities of Samaria instead of the children of Israel. And they possessed Samaria, and dwelt in the cities thereof. 2 Kings 17:24. It is these foreigners who were living in the land of Samaria in the time of Christ, and who were called Samaritans in the gospel records. It is well to keep that in mind. For the Samaritans of the New Testament were not in any sense a racial mixture with the Israelites. Only one individual, a priest, returned from among the captive Israelites to teach the newly planted Gentiles the corrupted religion of Israel. 2 Kings 17, verses 27 and 28. These people from the land of Babylon, however, did not follow God, nor God's way, nor his religion. The very next verse shows this. But every nation still made gods of their own. 2 Kings 17:29. The general state religion of the Assyrians and Babylonians was the Chaldean mystery religion. This was the religion of Simon the sorcerer, Acts 8, who believed Philip's miracles, appropriated the name Christian, and started a new counterfeit Christianity after the Apostle Peter rejected him as being bound in iniquity, that is, lawlessness. He took the name of Christ, rejected God's law, and added licentious false grace to the Babylonian mystery religion, calling it Christianity. This false Christianity has deceived millions, down to this present evil generation. A more detailed account of the captivity of Israel is found in 2 Kings 18, verses 9 through 12, and 17, verses 5 through 18. The house of Israel began to abide many days without a king, Hosea 3:4. Since they were the people who carried the title Israel, it is they, not Judah, who must become lost in identity. Israel, not Judah, lost. The scriptures plainly tell us that Israel was to lose its identity, its language, its religion, its land, and its name. In Deuteronomy 32:26, God had warned them through Moses, "I said, I would scatter them into corners. I would make the remembrance of them to cease from among men." That warning cannot be applied to the Jew. The remembrance of the Jews has not ceased. The remembrance of them could not cease unless their identity and name were lost. This applies to the lost tribes, not to the Jews. Now notice Isaiah 8:17, "And I will wait upon the Lord that hideth his face from the house of Jacob." Jacob's name was changed to Israel. In other words, this applies to the house of Israel, the 10-tribed kingdom, who were cut off from the presence of God. They consequently lost the knowledge of the true God and the true religion. The Eternal would cease speaking to them in their own Hebrew tongue, but with another tongue will he speak to this people, Isaiah 28:11. This cannot apply to the Jews, who still read their Bibles in the Hebrew tongue, Isaiah 62:2. "And the Gentiles shall see thy righteousness, and all kings thy glory," after Christ returns, "and thou shalt be called by a new name which the mouth of the Lord shall name." While this prophecy refers directly to the future after Christ's return, it has also been fulfilled typically, foreshadowing that time, by the fact that Israel is known by a different name today. That cannot apply to the Jews. They were known then and today as Jews. Israel never returned. The house of Israel did not return to Palestine with the Jews in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, as some erroneously believe. Those who returned to rebuild the temple and restore worship in Jerusalem at that time, 70 years after Judah's captivity, were only those of the house of Judah whom Nebuchadnezzar had carried to Babylon. Note well these facts. 1. In 721 through 718 B.C., Israel began to be carried away out of their own land to Assyria. 2 Kings 17:23. They were soon all removed, completely. There was none left but the tribe of Judah only. 2 Kings 17:18. Judah only remained. 2. More than 130 years later, Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon carried the Jews, Judah, who only remained in Palestine, away to Babylon. So none of the house of Israel dwelt in Palestine at the time of this captivity of Judah. 3. Those who returned to Palestine to rebuild the temple and restore worship 70 years after Judah's captivity were all of the house of Judah, all Jews, all of those whom Nebuchadnezzar had carried away. They returned again unto Jerusalem and Judah, every one unto his city, Ezra 2:1. Only those of the tribe of Judah, together with remnants of Benjamin and Levi, who constituted the house of Judah, returned at that time. Then rose up the chief of the fathers of Judah and Benjamin, and the priests and the Levites, Ezra 1:5. There are, of course, those who reject this truth God has seen fit now in our time to reveal, and who falsely represent that all Israelites, including the 10-tribed house of Israel, returned to Jerusalem at the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. They will sift out instances where the word Israel is used in connection with individuals or people of the house of Judah and misrepresent that they are the house of Israel. Let it be repeated for emphasis. Jews are Israelites, but only part of the Israelites are Jews. The term Jew is a nickname for the national name Judah. Jews are truly men of Israel or people of Israel, but they are not of the nation called the House of Israel or Kingdom of Israel. Those who refuse this truth turn to such a passage as this, "And the residue of Israel, of the priests and the Levites, were in all the cities of Judah, every one in his inheritance." Nehemiah 11:20. Because the word Israel is used, they will claim these are all 12 tribes. But it is specifically speaking of priests and Levites, and they are of the House of Judah, but not of the 10-tribed house of Israel. They were truly the residue of Israel, the residue of the 12 tribes. They were Israelites, but they were not of the nation called the house of Israel. They returned to their inheritance in the land of Judah. Nehemiah says plainly, "These are the children of the province that went up out of the captivity, the captivity to Babylon, captivity of Judah, not the house of Israel, of those that had been carried away, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away, Nehemiah 7:6. And none of the 10 tribes had been left in Palestine after the Assyrian captivity more than 100 years before, 2 Kings 17:18. Ezra says, "And the children of Israel, the priests and the Levites, and the rest of the children of the captivity, kept the dedication." Ezra 6:16. These were people of the kingdom of Judah, not the kingdom of Israel, but they were children of Israel. Names and genealogies are given in Ezra and Nehemiah of those who went back to Palestine from Babylon, and there was none from any of the 10 tribes. Consequently, those in Jerusalem at the time of Christ were of these 3 tribes, not of the house of Israel. And most, if not all, of those converted were of the tribe of Benjamin, as Paul said he was. The house of Israel became known as the Lost 10 Tribes, now known by another name, speaking a different language. By what name are they known today? Whoever they are, wherever they are, it is they, and not the Jews, who are the birthright possessors. It is they, not the Jews, who, after the ending of their punishment in A.D. 1800 to 1803, must inherit the unbreakable promises to Abraham of national greatness, resources, wealth, and power. It is Manasseh who was to become the world's greatest single nation, Ephraim a great commonwealth of nations. Who can they be today?
Chapter 7. Jeremiah's Mysterious Commission.
We come now to one of the most fascinating and gripping phases of this strange story of Israel. Indeed, the very connecting link between prophecy and present-day fulfillment, yet totally unrecognized by theologians. After the house of Israel, the northern kingdom whose capital was Samaria, was driven into Assyrian captivity, 721 through 718 BC, the kingdom of Judah continued on in the southern part of Palestine, known as Judea. At that time, Judah, as a nation, had not yet rejected the government and religion of God. God had continued to keep his covenant with David. David's dynasty had continued on the throne over part of the Israelites, the house of Judah, the Jews. But after Israel had become lost from view, Judah turned from the ways and government of God, going after the ways of the Gentile nations, sinning even worse than Israel, until finally the Eternal drove Judah too into national captivity and slavery. Before Judah's apostasy, God had said through the prophet Hosea, "Though thou, Israel, play the harlot, yet let not Judah offend." Hosea 4:15. But later the Eternal said to Jeremiah, "Have you seen what she did, that faithless one Israel, how she played the harlot? And her false sister Judah saw it. She saw that for all the adulteries of the faithless one Israel, I had sent her away with a decree of divorce. Yet her false sister Judah did not fear, but she too went and played the harlot. Faithless Israel has shown herself less guilty than false Judah." Jeremiah 3, verses 6 through 11, RSV. Here again, it is made distinctly plain that the 12 tribes of Israel were divided into 2 totally separate nations. And yet opponents of the truth revealed in this book deny these plain scriptures and attempt to discredit those who reveal it. Now see how Judah, the Jews, more than 130 years after Israel's captivity, also was removed from their land. They were taken as slaves to Babylon, not to Assyria, where Israel had been taken. And the Eternal said, "I will remove Judah also out of my sight, as I have removed Israel, and will cast off this city Jerusalem, which I have chosen, and the house of which I said, my name shall be there." 2 Kings 23:27. And so, more than 130 years after Israel's captivity, the time came when God caused the Jews also to be driven out of their land in national captivity and slavery. Jeremiah's strange commission. For this purpose, God raised up a very special prophet whose real call and commission few indeed understand. This prophet was Jeremiah. Jeremiah played a strange and little realized role in this captivity. Something of the importance of this mission may be gleaned from this significant fact. The Bible mentions 3 men only who were sanctified for their respective offices before they were born, and of these 3, Jeremiah was the first. The other two were John the Baptist and Jesus Christ. The Eternal first spoke to Jeremiah when he was but a young lad, about, some evidence indicates, 17 years of age. By the time his mission was completed, he was an aged, white-haired patriarch. This vital yet little-known call and commission is described in the opening verses of the first chapter of the book of Jeremiah. "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you," the Eternal said to him, "and before you were born, I consecrated you. I appointed you a prophet to the nations." Jeremiah 1:5, RSV. But Jeremiah was frightened, afraid. "Ah, Eternal God," he replied, "behold, I do not know how to speak, for I am only a youth." But the Eternal answered, "Do not say, 'I am only a youth,' for to all to whom I send you, you shall go, and whatever I command you, you shall speak. Be not afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you." Verses 6-8. Then the Eternal put forth his hand and touched Jeremiah's mouth. "See," said God, "I have set you this day over nations and over kingdoms, to pluck up and to break down, to destroy and to overthrow, to build and to plant." Verses 9 and 10. Or as this tremendous commission is worded in the Authorized Version, "to root out and to pull down and to destroy and to throw down, to build and to plant." Notice Jeremiah was set over nations, more than one kingdom. He was a Jewish lad living in Judah. He was set a prophet over Judah, but not Judah alone. Over nations, over kingdoms. He was set over these kingdoms to do two things. First, to pluck up or root out, to pull down or to overthrow, and second, to build and to plant. Not realized today. Look at it in your own Bible. Jeremiah was used of God as a prophet to warn the nation Judah of their transgressions against God's government and ways. He was sent to warn this rebellious nation of impending punishment, their invasion and captivity at the hands of the Chaldean armed forces, unless they acknowledged their guilt and changed their ways. He was used as a go-between, an intermediary between the kings of Judah and Babylon. It is well known that Jeremiah was used in warning Judah of the impending captivity and the pulling down or overthrowing of the throne of David in the kingdom of Judah. It is generally understood that the house of Judah was invaded by the armies of King Nebuchadnezzar, that the Jews were taken captive to Babylon, that they ceased from being a kingdom, that there no longer existed a ruler of David's dynasty on the throne over the kingdom of Judah. What then does this mean? Did God at last forget his covenant promise to David that David's dynasty should never cease, that David's throne was established in Solomon to continue through all generations forever? Had God Almighty now forgotten that he had sworn that he would not alter this promise, even though the kings and the people rebelled and sinned? The faithfulness of God is at stake. The inspiration of the Holy Bible as his revealed word is at stake. But note it. See it in your own Bible. Jeremiah was divinely commissioned to pull down and to overthrow that very throne of David and Judah. But notice the second half of the commission, to build and to plant. To build and to plant what? Why, naturally, that which he was used in rooting out of Judah, the throne of David, which God swore he would preserve forever. Jeremiah was set over not just the one nation, Judah, but over nations, over the kingdoms, the kingdom of Israel as well as Judah. He was used in rooting out that throne from Judah. Then what was Jeremiah commissioned to do in Israel? Notice the second half of his strange and little understood commission, to build and to plant. So far as the world knows, the last king to sit on that throne of David was Zedekiah of Judah. He was thrown down off the throne and the throne rooted out of Judah in the year 585 BC, nearly 600 years before Christ. What happened to that throne? Where was that throne between 585 BC and the time of Christ 600 years later? We know Jeremiah did not plant and rebuild it in Babylon. God had promised that David's throne should rule over Israelites through all generations, not over Gentiles. We have the history of the continuance of the Gentile throne in Babylon. David's throne was never again planted or built among the Jews. It was not reigning over the Jews in the time of Christ. The Jews were then under the Roman rule. Jesus did not ascend any such throne. The throne was not functioning in Judah. It was not existing at that place or over that people. It was not there for Jesus to take over. And Jesus said plainly that his kingdom was not of this present age. Yet he was born to sit upon this very throne of his father David, Luke 1:32. But that throne was divinely commissioned to be planted and rebuilt by the prophet Jeremiah during his lifetime. Jeremiah was set over both Judah and Israel, to be used in rooting out David's throne in Judah, but more, to plant and to build then of necessity among the house of Israel, lo, these many days without a king, among lost Israel, now supposing herself to be Gentile. Therefore, the identity and location of the replanting must remain hidden to the world until this time of the end in which we live. Tearing down the throne. The life and work of Jeremiah is a most fascinating story. The first chapters of the book of Jeremiah are devoted to his ministry, warning of the impending captivity of the Jews. He warned the kings, the priests, prophets, and people of Judah, delivering God's message. They threw him in prison, and they refused to heed or obey God. Then God caused their captivity. It is generally known that Babylon took Judah in three different stages. The first siege was in 604 BC, a date about 2 years later than has been commonly reckoned, but a date now firmly established. The land did not completely pass into the hands of these Gentile Babylonians, however, until a full time cycle of 19 years later, or 585 BC. You can read the part played by Jeremiah in this captivity in the book of Jeremiah. But now notice an interesting fact. The last and final king recorded either in Bible or secular history as having sat on the throne of David was King Zedekiah of Judah. Remember his name. Now notice 2 Kings 24:18. Zedekiah was 21 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna. Now notice briefly a description of the final tearing down and rooting out of this throne of David. In the 9th year of Zedekiah, king of Judah, in the 10th month, came Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, and all his army against Jerusalem, and they besieged it. And in the 11th year of Zedekiah, in the 4th month, the 9th day of the month, the city was broken up. And it came to pass that when Zedekiah the king of Judah saw them, and all the men of war, then they fled. But the Chaldeans' army pursued after them, and overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho. And when they had taken him, they brought him up to Nebuchadnezzar king of Babylon, to Riblah, in the land of Hamath, where he gave judgment upon him. Then the king of Babylon slew the sons of Zedekiah in Riblah before his eyes. Also the king of Babylon slew all the nobles of Judah. Moreover, he put out Zedekiah's eyes and bound him with chains to carry him to Babylon. Jeremiah 39:1-7. In the 52nd chapter, first 11 verses, we find almost a word-for-word description of the same events with the added phrase, "and put him, Zedekiah, in prison till the day of his death." These passages bring out these points. 1. The king of Babylon slew all the sons of Zedekiah who were heirs to the throne of David. 2. He also slew all the nobles of Judah so as to leave no possible heirs for that throne. 3. Finally, after putting out Zedekiah's eyes, the king who sat on David's throne was himself taken to Babylon, where he died in prison. 4. Thus, as it appears, and as the whole world has believed, the throne of David ceased, with no possible heirs or sons to keep the dynasty alive. Certain it is that from that day on, the throne never again has existed in Judah, in Jerusalem, or among the Jews. What about Jeconiah? It is true that a former king of Judah was at that time in the dungeons of Babylon, and he had sons to continue David's line. Former King Jeconiah, Jehoiakim, taken to Babylon in chains, was restored to honor 37 years after the captivity. See 2 Kings 25:27-30. He was even given the title king along with numerous other captive vassal kings. One of Jeconiah's sons was Salathiel, who was the father of Zerubbabel, the son of royal seed through whom Jesus Christ himself traced his royal ancestry back to David, Matthew 1:12. And Zerubbabel, or Zerubbabel, was the man God caused Cyrus, king of Persia, to make a decree giving him the governorship, not the crown of a king, to return to Jerusalem and rebuild the house of God, the temple, 70 years after the captivity. Yet neither Jeconiah nor any of his sons or grandsons reigned as king in Judah. Why? If there was a descendant of the line of David who lived through the captivity, why wasn't he restored to the throne when he was returned to Jerusalem? Why? Simply because God would not permit it. It is God who makes kings and unmakes them. God was determined to remove the crown of David from the ruling line of Perez and place it on the head of a son of Zerah. Yet a royal line straight from David had to remain in the area so the Christ could be born of David's seed yet hundreds of years in the future. And God also had to keep his promise to David that he, David, would never lack a descendant to sit on the throne. Many intricate and fascinating prophecies had to be carried out, some seemingly contradictory. A difficult job to perform, an awesome commission from God to Jeremiah. As I live, saith the Lord, though Jeconiah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, were the signet upon my right hand, yet would I pluck thee thence. Jeremiah 22:24. God had determined an end for this line of kings. He was removing the crown, not permitting Jeconiah's sons to reign on Judah's throne. God was overturning the throne to another branch of Judah's family. God told Jeremiah forcefully, "Thus saith the Lord, write ye this man childless, a man that shall not prosper in his days. For no man of his seed shall prosper, sitting upon the throne of David and ruling any more in Judah." Jeremiah 22:30. God spoke, Jeremiah wrote. History was designed and done as God said. Jeconiah had children. God himself caused this fact to be recorded. See 1 Chronicles 3:17, Matthew 1:12. But as far as the throne of David was concerned, he was childless. None of his children ever occupied that throne. The crown had now been removed from the Perez line, uprooted from Judah, any immediate candidates to the throne killed, and Jeconiah incarcerated in a Babylonian prison, written childless as far as the throne was concerned by the command of God Almighty. Jeremiah had now accomplished the first part of his great commission. The throne had been rooted out, the kingdom torn completely down. Judah was now beginning her national punishment. Where did Jeremiah go? But what about the second part of Jeremiah's important commission? Jeremiah was among these captive Jews. He must be free to carry out the second part of his commission. So, Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, gave charge concerning Jeremiah to Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, saying, "Take him and look well to him, and do him no harm, but do unto him even as he shall say unto thee." Jeremiah 39, verses 11 and 12. And the captain of the guard took Jeremiah, and said unto him, "Behold, I loose thee this day from the chains which were upon thine hand. If it seem good unto thee to come with me into Babylon, come, and I will look well unto thee. But if it seem ill unto thee to come with me into Babylon, forbear. Behold, all the land is before thee. Whither it seemeth good and convenient for thee to go, thither go." So the captain of the guard gave him victuals and a reward, money, and let him go, Jeremiah 40, verses 2 through 5. So Jeremiah was left absolutely free to do as he pleased, supplied even with expense money, and given complete freedom, so that he might perform the second half of his mission. Where did he go? We come now to an amazing, fascinating, thrilling part of the book of Jeremiah, which has been almost entirely overlooked. Then went Jeremiah unto Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, to Mizpah, and dwelt with him among the people that were left in the land. Verse 6. Now this Gedaliah had been made governor over a remnant of Jews in the land by the king of Babylon, and since Jerusalem was destroyed, he had made Mizpah his headquarters. But the king of Ammon plotted with a Jew named Ishmael to assassinate Gedaliah. The plot was executed, the governor and part of the Jews were slain. Jeremiah was among the survivors. Then Ishmael carried away captive all the residue of the people that were in Mizpah, even the king's daughters, and all the people that remained in Mizpah, whom Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard from Babylon, had committed to Gedaliah, and carried them away captive, and departed to go over to the Ammonites. Jeremiah 41:10. Ah, did you catch it? Read that passage again. Among these Jews were the king's daughters, daughters of Zedekiah, king of Judah, and of David's dynasty. King Zedekiah had died in prison in Babylon, Jeremiah 52:11. All his sons had been killed. All the nobles of Judah had been killed. All possible heirs of Zedekiah to David's throne had been killed, except the king's daughters. Now we see why Jeremiah went to Mizpah. Jeremiah escapes. Soon a man named Johanan replaced Ishmael as leader. And in fear of reprisals from Nebuchadnezzar and the Chaldean army, Johanan and the captains appealed to the prophet and said unto Jeremiah the prophet, "Let, we beseech thee, our supplication be accepted before thee, and pray for us unto the Lord thy God, that the Lord thy God may shew us the way wherein we may walk." Jeremiah 42:2-3. They were like so many professing Christians today. They come to God's minister with solemn assurances that they surely do want to know God's will. They promise, as did these, "We will obey the voice of the Eternal our God." Verse 6. But did they mean it? Such people seldom do. Human nature wants to be good, or think it is good, but it does not want to do good. The word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, and he told them not to fear, that he would protect and deliver them. But the people wanted to flee to Egypt. This the Lord warned them not to do. If they did, the sword of Nebuchadnezzar, which they feared, would overtake them there, and they would die. "If ye wholly set your faces to enter into Egypt," God said, "and go to sojourn there, then it shall come to pass that the sword which ye feared shall overtake you there, and there ye shall die." Jeremiah 42:15-16. But, as people usually do, they rejected God's warning. "Thou speakest falsely," Johanan answered. "The Eternal our God hath not sent thee to say, 'Go not into Egypt.'" Jeremiah 43:2-3. So Johanan and all the people obeyed not the voice of the Eternal. Verse 4. People who loudly profess to want to do God's will usually will not accept God's word as being his will unless it is their will. And so Johanan took all the remnant of Judah, even men and women and children, and the king's daughters, and Jeremiah the prophet, and Baruch the son of Neriah, Jeremiah's scribe or secretary. So they came into the land of Egypt. Jeremiah 43:5-7. On reaching Egypt, God warned these Jews again through Jeremiah that they should die there by the sword and famine, and none shall return but such as shall escape. Jeremiah 44:12-14. Yes, a few in this company are under divine protection. A divine mission is to be performed. They shall escape. The Eternal continues, "Yet a small number that escape the sword shall return out of the land of Egypt into the land of Judah." Jeremiah 44:28. Under divine protection. Baruch was Jeremiah's constant companion and secretary. It is important to note here God's promise of protection to him. "Thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, unto thee, O Baruch, Behold, that which I have built will I break down, and that which I have planted I will pluck up, even this whole land. But thy life will I give unto thee for a prey in all places whither thou goest." Jeremiah 45:2-5. Baruch's life, like Jeremiah's, was under divine protection. Now previously the Eternal had said to Jeremiah, "Verily it shall be well with thy remnant." The only remnant left for Jeremiah's mission of transplanting the throne was the king's daughters. "Verily," continued the Eternal, same verse, "I will cause the enemy to entreat thee well in the time of evil and in the time of affliction." Jeremiah 15:11. This God literally did, as described in chapter 39:11-12, and chapter 40:2-6, which I have covered previously.
This completes tape number 2, side number 2, of the book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. Please continue on tape number 3.